So tell me, Steve, did you watch Formula One this weekend?
No.
Okay, so if you get a spare minute or two, I suggest just going back, watching the highlights because they were at Portimão, and oh my God, what a stunning track.
Yeah, it's going to be good when we get there.
Honestly, after seeing the cars blast around it and seeing the elevation changes, it's going to be amazing.
Absolutely, I'm looking forward to it. I have seen like World Superbikes go around Portimão in the past,
Okay.
not recently, but yeah, I am looking forward to it. It's going to be so good. It's such a great track.
It looks so good, man. The Formula One race, to be fair, was, well, I mean, it was fine. But they were saying that the surface in it seems to be quite slippery. It's not offering a lot of grip, but there's very little tire degradation as well. So,
Right. That's going to be interesting, isn't it?
yeah, it could mean that soft tires are the only way to go, and they should be able to last the race distance. But dipping down into turn one, especially on the first lap, is going to be exciting, mate. There's going to be some crashes, I think.
Absolutely. We look forward to it.
We do. So let's dive in. I'm
Let's go
Tim,
for it.
he's Steve, and this is For the Love of MotoGP. So before we dive too far into it, I know you sort of explained this to me just before we started, but I did notice there was this annoying thing with this race in which everything MotoGP were putting out, they were calling it the Teruel GP, which was after, did you say it was after the region in Spain?
Yeah, the BT Sport guys did touch on it. I think a lot of people have asked the same question on Twitter, so I got in touch with them. Unfortunately, at the time, I was trying to get Brody asleep, so I wasn't listening properly. But apparently, it's something to do with like the province and the region. So if you have one race, it goes for like the bigger area, so the region. And then if you have a second race, it narrows it down, so it's the province.
Okay, so that obviously explains why we've had different named races throughout the year so far. But then
Yes.
the thing that really annoyed me was I saw other bits of MotoGP using the hashtag AlcanizGP.
Yes. Yeah. If I remember correctly, one day it was like one, and the next day it was a different name.
Is this just a fuck up on their social media part?
It could be. I think so. I
Okay.
didn't see anyone asking a question about that. I just went with the same hashtag all the way through it.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe this is just me just paying a little bit too much attention to that tiny little writing in the right-hand corner of the screen.
I do sort of flick across to it every now and again. I have to, like, especially if you put it out a tweet or something on Instagram, just remind myself where we are or check spelling. And I was like, that's different. But yeah, apparently it's something to do with that province and region.
Okay, fair enough. That'll do us then. Shall we, before we, I don't really know what I was trying to say then. I just started making noises. Last week we made a few predictions.
We did.
I was wrong. I thought Mir was going to win. You, however, thought that in turns one or two there was going to be a crash involving two or three of the front runners.
Yes, I thought there was going to be a bit of a pile-up, but that didn't quite happen.
It didn't quite happen. There was a crash involving two people in a turn one. However, it was certainly not front runners.
No.
And one of the front runners did go down on like turn four or five. So,
I
you were
was close.
closer with your prediction than I was.
Yeah, I looked at it. I sort of saw the couple go down on the first couple of corners. I was like, not quite what I thought, but yeah, okay. Someone did crash. Yeah, and then a little further around, somebody else did bin it.
Yeah, indeed.
But we'll talk about that later.
We will indeed. And apart from, like, there were a few crashes in this and a few retirements, But sort of aside from those, it was, well, I at least think it was actually quite a dull race. I don't know if you think any differently about this, but it wasn't the most exciting race of the year at all. It was probably the least exciting race of the year, actually.
Yeah, it wasn't a thriller. I still found myself on the edge of the seat. I always do, literally, just perch myself on the edge of the seat. And in this particular race, I was just willing a certain person not to drop it.
Mm.
And literally every corner, especially we got around to like turns two, the ones that claimed a few victims, I was just watching, just like, please don't bin it, please don't bin it. And as the laps were ticking down, I was getting more and more excited. So in that sense, watching one rider, it was a great race. But overall, when you go back and look at it, it didn't set you on fire.
No, I mean, like the two guys at the front, they were trading lap times for a bit and fastest laps, and like they'd close in a tenth and then pull out a tenth. And like it was sort of one of those kind of mental races where there's so much pressure on the riders, but they're still like a second apart for the entire race. And they're not, it's not like the handlebar banging duel that we like to see. Like we've seen the last corner duels with Marquez and Dovi in the past. It wasn't anything like that, but like the concentration involved for those guys is pretty insane. But from a spectator point of view, it wasn't the most exciting thing.
No, we like a bit of fisticuffs and handlebar banging and swapping of paint. But yeah, it teased us a lot. We've said that quite a few times this year, where they could just sneak like a few tenths closer.
Yeah.
And then drop back, and it's, oh, damn it. quite frustrating sometimes, but at the same time, it's MotoGP, it's always good. So it's just, we want to see a bit of fisticuffs.
Yeah, that's it. So shall we dive in and go through our normal routine of talking about the teams, and as per usual, starting with Aprilia.
They are there, they still.
Still there, just... so well, Smith qualifying 21st, whatever, finishing 15th, scored a point, that's nice. But the big news for Smith coming out of this weekend was he's now out for the rest of the year.
He's been replaced by Lorenzo Salvadori.
Yes, after Salvadori crushed Italian superbikes. Winning, I was just reading before we came on, I think he won 6 out of 8 races and came second in the other two.
No, that's not bad then.
That's like a Marc Marquez type year, isn't it?
Yeah, he just basically owned it.
Yeah. But yes, his reward for that is coming up. And he is the Aprilia MotoGP test rider anyway, but his reward, it seems, is jumping in and, you know, taking these last three races. I mean, if you're Aprilia at this point, why not? Like, Brad, he's done an all right job, hasn't he? But he's not set the world on fire. He's not been able to compete with his teammate.
No, absolutely not. The only kick in the teeth, really, for that is going to be if he comes out and absolutely crushes him. If he does come in and actually makes that bike competitive. We've seen that happen before.
Yeah.
And I think fingers are going to be pointed. But we'll see. We've got a weekend off now, then we'll see what he can do.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. I do wonder if he comes in and he really performs, whether that puts, like, because we know Cal Crutchlow is rumoured to be potentially taking an Aprilia ride next year, assuming Iannone doesn't come back. But if Salvadori comes back and really performs, I wonder if that puts any chance of Crutchlow or even Dovi, who was initially rumoured to be getting that ride, if that affects their chances.
I suppose it could do it, but I guess it depends if he's contracted for next year, what the get-out clauses are. There could already be something in place where, I don't know, maybe this is his reward for winning the Italian Superbikes. You know, it could have been written at the start of the year.
Yeah.
If you win it, you get these last three rounds, or X amount of rounds at the time. We wouldn't have known then what we were doing. So there might be a get-out clause in his contract. If he actually comes in and does something amazing, gets to grips with the bike, maybe there is a loophole there to say, right, actually come in.
Yeah, well, you would assume anyway. Like I assume he's on some sort of Aprilia factory contract, even in CIV, the Italian superbike. So if the Aprilia MotoGP team want him, I'm sure they can break their own Aprilia Superbike contract to get him.
Absolutely. There'll be something there. There'll be negotiations going on in the background.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll bring some people with him to solidify his case if he needs it.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll wait and see. I think it's going to be quite exciting to see the grid at least mixed up a little bit for the last final few rounds.
Yeah. Best of luck to him.
Exactly. And his teammate-to-be, Aleix Espargaró, qualified 13th. Didn't finish the race. Looked pretty feisty, actually, throughout most of the race. Had a bit of a scrap. Scrapped his way through. Had a bit of a nasty overtake on Dovi. Pushed Dovi very wide at turn one. Started to pull a gap on all the guys behind him. I think that was for about 10th place at the time.
Something like that, yeah.
And then had a mechanical, which just dumped him out of the race.
Yeah, he did not look happy about it either.
No.
But he did look racy. We know Aleix, he's not afraid to put it under someone if he needs to or can. Mm. Which, again, it's quite a frustrating thing when he's on that bike. And when we see him doing this kind of thing, it shows how good he is. And it's just, he's sort of languishing on a bike that just can't.
Yeah, but then we've seen him on bikes that can in the past, haven't we? We saw him with a little factory Suzuki that Vinales won a race on, and Espargaró didn't even get on the podium. We saw him on that forward racing Yamaha that was a weird bike, and people like Cal Crutchlow were saying if Lorenzo was on this bike, he'd be winning races. And
exactly.
I think Espargaró put it on the box once, maybe twice.
Something like that.
And it did come out this weekend, didn't it? On BT Sport, at least, Neil Hodgson talking about Aleix Espargaró, and he's like, I was looking through the record books. It turns out he's the only rider on the grid never to have won a Grand Prix.
No, never.
So
that must be infuriating.
It must be really infuriating.
Must be like, I've tried so hard.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all right. He's lining himself up for a career as a pro cyclist. He'll be fine.
Yes. He's certainly got a future in sport ahead of him, no matter what happens to his MotoGP career, I think.
God, yeah, he'll be cycling up those Andorian hills.
Yeah.
Doing something. Yeah, I'm sure he'll still have a ride somewhere.
Yes, I'm sure he will. And that's kind of Aprilia done. That was, for once, actually quite nice to talk about Aprilia, but I'm not going to dwell on it. So let's move on to Ducati. it's weird to be talking about Ducati second in our kind of running order of things, but they really had a bad weekend.
Yeah, that was definitely one to write off for three quarters of them.
For five sixths of them.
Yeah, yeah. Not good. Not good at all.
No.
None of them, bar one, looked good on race day.
None of them, bar one, looked good for qualifying or through practice.
No. Saying that, I wasn't thinking back, actually. I was like, yeah, I'd have packed up Friday afternoon and gone home.
I think I would have done as well. And I think, actually, in the middle of the race, we saw Dovi mentally pack it up and go home.
He just did not look like Dovi. I'm sure there's somebody else under that hood.
Yeah.
I don't know what has gone on, what has happened.
Well, it was mad, wasn't it? Like, all of the Ducatis, essentially, throughout free practice, were circulating at the back. They were, at one point, the bottom six bikes were all Ducatis. When it came to qualifying, we'll run them all in the order of who finished where, but coming from the back of the grid. Tito Rabat was the last Ducati, qualified 20th. And then we had Petrucci qualifying 19th, Pecco Bagnaia qualifying 18th, Dovi qualified 17th, Jack Miller qualified 14th, and Zarco managed to qualify 5th, which was a bit weird.
I'm not really sure what happened there, whether he had one too many energy drinks or...
He's still got some Red Bull stash left over from his time at KTM.
Yeah, what went on there? There's always a black sheep, so, you know... He just sort of came out and went, right, just watch this, lads. Just follow me.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, we know he's on a GP19, not the GP20. Mm. So he's not been struggling with the same issues that the GP20 has had this year.
No.
We know Ducati as a whole have been struggling with the new Michelin tyres, but the GP20 even more so than the 19. So yeah. I did kind of start to put it down to the fact that it's just the GP19 is just better around Aragon, where Dovi had finished second here last year. So I put it down to that. And then it started to dawn on me that Tito Rabat's on exactly the same bike as him.
Yeah, but when you put the two next to each other.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a fair point. Tito Rabat is also a Moto2 world champion, let's not forget.
Yeah, he is an amazing rider.
He was an amazing rider, I think, is well, a fairer yeah. term there.
Yeah, compared to me, he's an awesome rider, but there you go.
I mean, compared to any of us, he's an awesome yeah. rider. But compared to the rest of the grid, he's certainly not the man he once was.
No, you'd be pissed if he turned up at your local track day. But yeah, on a MotoGP bike, grid, not so much.
Yeah, that's fair.
Zarco managed to pull something out of the hat.
Yeah, I wonder whether it's his Lorenzo-type riding style that's done this.
I think so. Like you said, combination of last year's machinery, which we know goes well at Aragon.
Yeah.
He has a slightly different riding style to the others, should we say.
Well, he's got a much more Yamaha riding style, hasn't he? He's always liked wide lines, a lot of corner speed. Whereas you look at how... Dovi, who's always been fast on a Ducati, it's a very stop-and-go style. And that's not naturally Dovi's style. He's had to develop that style for the Ducati.
He's worked at that one.
Yeah, over the last 7 or 8 seasons or something, he's been with them. But that was always how to ride a Ducati fast. Zarco's never been that way.
No.
But with this new tyre, has been able to pop in some results like this. So as far as finishing positions go... Zarco did finish as top Ducati in 5th place. Next Ducati actually was Danilo Petrucci down in 10th, followed by Dovi in 13th, Tito Rabat was in 14th, and neither of the Pramac boys actually finished the race.
Yeah, it was a bad day for them.
Yeah, it was. It was a really bad day for that, actually. But yeah, but Zarco really showed himself, and Zarco kind of proving why he's going to be moving up to Pramac next year. And taking kind of the lead role in that team.
Did you see the team when he got the Zarco but got back to the pits?
They all looked pretty stoked for him.
They did look pretty. They looked like they won it.
Yeah.
But considering the bad weekend the rest of the Ducatis had, that probably felt like a race win.
Oh, it certainly did. And I bet Zarco was walking around the paddock afterwards just strutting his stuff like, I am Billy Big Bollocks here.
The only one with a bigger head than him in that garage was Ruben's house.
Certainly, yes.
Yeah. He was out the back. It's me, I did this.
Yeah, quite.
Listen.
Yeah, I don't know how it would feel to be Tito in that team at the moment.
I would probably be sat in the corner making as less noise as possible, not drawing any attention to myself.
Yeah.
Just like, let's just go about my business and hope someone sticks a rocket up my ass.
Yeah, fair.
I don't know. You've got to start really questioning yourself when numerous people come in and are better than you or scoring better results than you.
Yeah, certainly. And people are talking about him as like he's got a contract signed, but everyone is saying he'll be out next year. That's got to really be fucking with your head as well.
Absolutely. I mean, there's going to be conversations had with his team and Ducati in that pit about his status and his role. Which, if he needs it, I'm sure someone will sit down with him and sort of reassure him, no, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe. But essentially, if someone comes along who could do the job better, he's gone.
Yeah. And kind of, I don't know, the evidence, I mean, up until the last few rounds, has pointed towards the fact that Luca Marini, Valentino's brother, who is rumoured to be replacing Rabat, could do the job better.
Yeah. It's going to play with your head. He's going to see what people are saying on social media. He's only got to look at the results and just see it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I feel sorry for the chap. It's a harsh thing to have to go through.
Yeah.
And you'll probably find all the pressure is affecting his results, maybe. But
I don't know. I don't know if it is, man. I think these results were the same last year as well.
Yeah, I'm just sort of trying to make it. Smooth it over for him, make him feel a little bit better for when he listens.
I don't think he gives a shit what you or I are saying, mate. At the end of the day, he knows full well that as matter what our opinion is, he's much faster than we'll ever be. He's made a lot more money than we ever will.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter what happens with his career now, he can leave with his head held high knowing that he was a Grand Prix race winner. knowing that he won championships in the lower levels and was able to compete with the fastest guys in the world. So as harsh as we are, and a lot of people are being about Rabat, there's no doubt that he is one of the fastest guys in the world on a motorbike.
Absolutely. He is in that top 2%.
Yeah, but more than the top 2, top 0.0002. But the two Pramac boys, let's move on from the Sponsor Arms squad and talk about the Pramac squad's race. Again, like we've just talked through their actual qualifying and race positions, but a really bad weekend for Pramac, man.
I'm sure they were the first ones out of the paddock.
Yeah, without
Sunday
a doubt.
Sunday night, those trucks were packed up within record time. Everything was loaded and they were just off.
Yeah, I'm certain that was the case. I mean, Miller wiped out on turn one of lap one by Brad Binder. Just what the fuck happened? Like, Brad Binder, did he just miss his braking marker? Or did he just think, oh, Jack Miller's got a nice bomb, let's have a closer look? Because he just crashed into the back of him.
I think it was a bit of both. I think three things happened. One, he wanted to check out his ass. Two, he missed his braking zone. And three, he thought, if I hop on that bike, I might get a bit of a better result. that didn't happen at all. I don't know. There was someone said Miller actually had a little sit up and probably dabbed a bit of brake, slowed down quickly, should. Binder didn't react, so just bang, back of him.
Okay.
Maybe. That is a maybe, because the camera angles are pretty awkward to see.
Yeah, it's going to happen at the back of the pack, isn't it? It's quite hard to see the crashes at the back there unless the camera catches a really lucky glimpse of it.
Yeah, but whatever happened, Binder went into the back of him and they both just binned it first corner. But they both got up. No drama, no nothing. Just arms around each other, walked away. Quick hug, you're good. Psh, off we go.
That's the chilled out Australian and chilled out South African vibes coming together, isn't it? To like, shit happens, let's go get a beer. Because I bet that's what they did as well. I bet they went out and got trolleyed.
Absolutely no doubt about it. Both did a shoey. Mate, you would not want to do that after a race, would you?
No, certainly not. So the other Pramac rider there, Bagnaia, he did crash out of the race, didn't he?
He did, yes.
I can't remember when I've written crashed out on lap on my notes, because I obviously second time watched the race, I didn't even see what lap he crashed out on. So
no, I don't think we actually saw the crash. Okay. I think it just flagged up on that little box in the corner, Bagnaia crashed.
I was otherwise occupied while making my notes. So
again, another crash. Not good.
No, not at all. So the factory boys, not good. What at all was it? Petrucci finishing in 10th, three places ahead of Dovi. And actually, just for most of the race, looked stronger than Dovi. Towards the end of the race, like he had way more pace. They had a bit of a back and forth for a couple of corners, but then Petrucci just rode off.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say rode off into the distance. Like, it was a great achievement because it's still 10th.
For a factory Ducati, that it's a bad day.
Exactly. I bet Petrucci cannot wait for next year. Go jump on that KTM, go hang out with Hervé, like just different atmosphere, get out of Ducati now.
I think that is the case. I think it's just damage, limitation, reputation. What's the word? Recovery? Just trying to think,
Well, I don't think he even needs a reputation recovery, not for him, because we've seen him win a race. I don't think anyone's looking at Petrucci now. And I mean, actually, to be fair, at the beginning of this year and end of last year, I think, I know I was, and I think people were looking at Petrucci and being like, come on, man, you need to pull your finger out and get it done.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people.
After seeing his win this year, and knowing, hearing about the fractious relationships going on in that Ducati garage, I think most people are looking at Petrucci being like, you've been fucked over, mate. Just get out, get somewhere good, and just go stick your fingers up to Ducati next year.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely the case. It's just, he doesn't want to be there. We've said it before. He's ready to go. Get gone. Get in that team. Get yourself on that KTM and just enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
I think that is it. You know, he's awesome lad, big smiley lad who just wants to go out, have fun, and just do his work. Mm. And it just doesn't seem like Ducati are going to let him do it. But yeah, I completely agree. Sit out the next three races and just get on that KTM.
Well, that's it. I guess it's just ride around the next three and collect your money and move on. And I, Dovi as well, his teammate, I'm starting to be a bit baffled by what's been happening with Dovi this year. Like we say, it's, we know that rear tire has not worked in the Ducati. We know there's a very fractious relationship going on. But we also know this was his chance. Like, this yeah. was his title year. I can't believe he's still in the title fight. He's 28 points back at the moment or something.
It is just baffling how he is still there. It's unbelievable. I just, how?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Like, it's just, but it just shows the lack of consistency that's been going on from everyone. I mean, the guy leading the championship right now by 15 points or 14 points or whatever it is, he's been the most consistent rider this year and not won a fucking race. Like, it's, no. It's a strange one. It's a weird year, but it's, I just can't believe Dovi's still in with a chance. And I can't believe that he's not grabbed it by, like, grabbed it with both hands and really gone for it.
I don't think you can, to be honest with you. With that bike the way it is, I just don't think if he could, if he wanted to.
And I'm sure he does want to. Like, I'm sure it's not that. And I'm sure it is the bike. It is that fractious relationship going on in Ducati.
Yeah.
But it's just weird, isn't it, that they can't, like, set aside their differences and just get on with it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, a team is there to win the championship,
mm.
be it constructors, rider championship, whatever. The rider's there to win the championship and to win it for the team. So ultimately, it goes without saying, they're there for the same goal.
They are, and it's a marketing thing for both. Like, it's
yeah.
the point of racing is it's marketing for Ducati. It's marketing for these teams, and for the riders. It's building their own personal brand as well. Like, yeah. Dovi, Desmo Dovi, as it was, kind of was set to for him to retire and be like a Ducati brand ambassador and get that position, get paid for life, you know, like McDoohan is for Honda, yeah. like Valentino Rossi will be for Yamaha. And that always looked the case. And then this year, that's certainly proved that that's never going to be the case. And
absolutely
yet,
not.
Ducati clearly don't look like they want to go and get the extra marketing budget from winning a MotoGP World Championship. And it doesn't really look like Dovi wants to build his own brand by being champion. Although I know they both definitely do want that. They don't seem to be able to do it together in the year that is their year to be able to do it.
It's just all falling apart. I think the second Marquez got injured, they must have been like a bunch of meerkats in that garage, heads on swivels,
mm.
just looking around thinking, right, this is it.
Yeah, and certainly.
It wouldn't surprise me if every single person in that garage has put their heads down, tried to come up with every single calculation to win this championship, and they've just overthought it and overcooked the goose.
Potentially.
That is the way I see it. Like you see, with the way things are within the team, you add that into the mix, you add bad results into it with Dovi, you start questioning yourself, motivation starts to go, your head drops, and then before you know it, you're just not there. Dovi's an intelligent rider. If he knows, right, this race, I can only finish 10th, he will finish 10th. He will not push it to gain those extra few points and risk losing what he's got. Just for maybe two more points. If he knows this is what I've got, he will stick with that. Unless he is at the point at the end and there is a sniff of winning a race and winning the championship, then he will. But mid-pack, take the points.
Yeah.
And that just seems to be what he's doing. He is pushing, but to me, he's not pushing beyond his limit to risk losing everything.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's beyond the point now. I think he has to push and risk losing everything or he's going to be completely out of it.
I think, to be honest with you, everyone says he's still in the championship. To me, he's out of it, and he's been out of it for a while.
It's funny, though, isn't it? Because we say that, and like, what did we say? He's 20-something points back, 28 points back.
28 points.
And I agree with you. I think he's out of the championship. However, Alex Rins, who is a further 4 points back from Dovi, so 32 points back off the lead, I don't think he's out of this championship.
No, but he looks better. That's the difference in it. It's just the results speak for themselves. How many podiums has Rins had compared to Dovi? You know, if we were to put two graphs next to each other of consistent results, Rins is, it's just going to be that little bit higher than Dovi's. And it's just that little bit that's going to make the difference.
It's a weird year.
It is a very weird year. And we're not the only ones to say it. Every single person is just saying this is the strangest year ever.
Yeah, quite. So let's dive on to Honda, because if we think it's a weird year for us and for most teams, imagine what the year has been like for Honda.
Just an emotional roller coaster. These boys are going to have group therapy after this season.
They're going to bloody need it, mate. This weekend, I think, saw what was almost, we could call, like, it could have been the return of Honda. It could have been their miraculous fight back to the top step of the podium. Without Marc Marquez, they still managed to win a race. They managed to prove all the haters wrong. And then dreams were just crushed. It's like the racing gods just went, nah, not today, lads. Not today, I'm afraid.
The first thing that popped into my head was that crash was Aussie Man Reviews. Fucked it. Destination fucked.
That is, so we saw, I guess let's go deal with that crash first. Taka Nakagami had the pace all weekend. He was so fast. He was the point, like, through a lot of free practice and stuff, he was half a second up on everyone.
Yeah.
It's so quick.
It's whatever has happened to that Honda. We've seen it with Alex Marquez. It just filtered its way down to Taka. And the boy was just on fire.
Yeah.
You could not stop him. And amazingly, and somehow put it into on pole.
Yeah, we topped almost every session, put it on pole. The first Japanese rider to get a pole position since 2004. And he just looked unstoppable. It really did look like he was going to go, he was going to, within the first lap, have half a second and then just chip away at everyone. And he genuinely looked like, on his race pace and everything, he could win by 10, 12 seconds.
I had it down just to disappear.
Yeah, and that's what it looked like. And even when he got the launch, he launched off the line, pulled into the lead, started gapping everyone, and then three corners later, bins it.
Destination fucked.
Destination fucked. He ran it out wide, lost the front. The front went quick as well, just that did go from underneath.
Almost
him.
Sort of bunny hopped. When he saw the replay, it was just like a little skip. It was like, toof, gone.
Yeah.
Bike sideways. But on the warm up lap, I remember watching the camera angle on the back straight, and there was a bike just being overtaken like crazy. Not running at pace, not getting the heat in the tyres, and apparently that was Taka.
Yeah, and when we saw them lining up again, like, because I was looking at it, I was like, why is everyone on the grid except Taka on pole position? Yeah, like, where
last
is he?
Person.
It was weird, yeah. It did look a lot like he just ran it too slow and his tyres got cold and that was that.
I think that was the case. I think he just sort of bimbled it round a little bit, just nursed it home, made sure there was nothing, no drama on the warm-up lap, and then cold tyres. Everyone else just had that little bit of heat.
Yeah.
Like you say, shot off the line, pushed down.
There's nerves though, isn't it? Like, the only thing more embarrassing than crashing on the first lap when you're the fastest man all weekend is crashing on the warm-up lap. So,
yeah.
Can't really blame him. Like, I cannot imagine what it's like to be in the position that he was in. Of kind of, he's won GPs in the past, but never won a MotoGP.
No.
And this just looked like the weekend he was going to do it. And he was going to, he's never had a podium in MotoGP.
Nothing.
And it looked like his weekend. It was his weekend to lose. And he did lose it.
With style.
Yeah. We had the situation where, so we saw Nakagami go. But all weekend before Nakagami, everyone was also talking about Alex Marquez. And they're thinking, Alex Marquez, he could win this one. He could do it. He had great race pace. He put it in 10th in qualifying. So not great, but not terrible, considering, you know, he's come back from worse positions in the last couple of races to score podiums.
Right.
And he, again, he looked quick. He was carving his way through the field. He was onto the back of the podium, hunting down Johan Mir. Fast, aggressive, looked again like more like Marc Marquez.
The first thing I thought, so watched him go around some corners, and I just thought you could put the two of them on a track day or on a track, just racing around, just having a general Sunday to themselves. And their styles, or Alex Marquez's style this weekend, just looked exactly like his brother's.
Yeah, he just looks a little bit less wild. It looks like Marc Marquez on a controlled day.
Yeah, on a subtle Sunday afternoon bimble.
where he's like breaking lap records and still winning championships.
You know, he knows he's got it in the bag. He's going to push, but he's not going to risk it. But yeah, just... looks so good again.
Yeah.
But then the inevitable.
That's it. Lap 14. Down he goes. And that was that, really. Obviously, he didn't look anywhere near as devastated as Nakagami. But he was the only guy in the field, actually, to pick the hard front tyre, which was a very Marc Marquez-type decision. And maybe one that didn't really pay off for him. Maybe that's why he went down. He just didn't have the grip he needed. But then... 14 laps into a race, he definitely wouldn't still have the grip in the soft. So maybe it...
No. I don't know. I think just a case of pushing too hard, maybe a little bit too wide. I just dropped it. I was absolutely gutted when he did, because I just wanted to see what he could do again. I just wanted to see him keep building and building.
I don't think he'd have got any better than third, though, even if he could have kept going. I think he may have got Mir. I don't think he was hunting down Morbidelli and Rins, though.
No, I just wanted to see if he could. Wanted to see if he could just get that pace and go and just do what we see his brother do, and when you need to, reel people back in. But
I'll be really interested to see how Alex Marquez does at Valencia.
That is going to be one to watch.
Yeah, that's going to be the real test for me, I think, to see after his good wet podium in Le Mans and then to a track he knows and loves. To go to Valencia, which is a different track, to see how he performs there is going to be interesting. And see how he bounces back from this. His first crash of the year. Actually, both him and Nakagami were the only riders to have finished every race this year. So with their two crashes, there's not a rider that's finished every race now.
No, they lost that one, unfortunately. That would have been quite a mantle to finish the race or racing season without crashing.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been great.
I'd like to go... be able to cycle up the shops without crashing.
So then that brings us on to Cal Crutchlow, who qualified 7th, raced to 11th.
I thought he'd do better, to be honest with you.
Yeah, especially after qualifying 3rd last week.
Yeah, I thought we were going to see a bit of a Crutchlow slice his way through the field, elbows and arms out everywhere, but just didn't really happen.
No, it didn't happen at all.
It was a frustrating one. I don't think there was any rhyme or reason for it. I think it was just all that he could get out of it that weekend.
Yeah, it's just the pace he had. And actually, I did initially think, and I put it in my notes here, that it was a pretty bad race. When you looked at what Alex and Taka were capable of doing, Crutchlow was pretty slow. And then I realised that actually Crutchlow finished as the top Honda.
Exactly.
He scored points. Did any of the other Honda score points? Okay, Stefan Bradl also scored points. But the two guys that were faster than him didn't. Maybe he was getting the max out of the Honda.
Exactly. Bring it home, finish the race.
Yeah, exactly. And we did mention, Stefan Bradl briefly there. He qualified 16th, finished 12th. Fine, whatever.
Yay.
I tell you what, let's take a quick break, Steve, and then after that we'll move on to talking about KTM.
Go for it.
Right, so KTM. KTM had, I don't know, it's not the best weekend I've seen out of KTM, certainly not the worst. We saw Brad Binder qualifying 15th, and that was actually the worst qualifier. As looking at it now, Brad Binder 15th, worst qualifier, followed by Ike Lecuona in 11th, Pol Espargaró qualified 9th, and Miguel Oliveira qualified in 8th place as the top KTM. That's a nice mantle to have, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you'd be happy with that when you walk back into the garage and go, beat you lot.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, at least in qualifying.
Well, yeah, but, you know, anything's better than nothing.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So Brad Binder had his weird coming together with... hang on, I've confused myself here. Sorry, I clicked on the classifications and lost all of my notes. Yeah, Brad Binder had his weird coming together with Miller. Again, we've kind of gone through that, so we probably don't need to talk about it anymore. Yeah, short race, job done. Let's go for a pint. Yes. And then the next finisher on the KTM from that point was Ikel Ekwonen in ninth.
I actually think
Ikel Ekwonen is coming good.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. He is starting to look racy.
Mm.
You know, we had our doubts, but gradually, every single race, doesn't matter whether it's a hard track, one he doesn't like, he's improving.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how he gets on next year with Petrucci next to him, but I think, you know, I think he's going to be absolutely fine.
I really do. I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's going to put Petrucci away. But at the same time, I think Petrucci is quite personable. I don't think Petrucci is going to be a pain for him to deal with. I think they'll get along fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that he's just going to keep improving. And I think next year we'll probably see him really start to improve. I will be surprised if he gets a better finish in the next few rounds, the next three rounds, than this kind of ninth, like knocking on the top 10. But next year, I would expect him to be starting to plug away towards the top six and doing kind of what Oliveira is doing this year.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's my next shout was going to be. That's where he needs to be.
Mm.
Next year, be this year's Oliveira.
Yeah.
And if you can, if you get a sniff of something higher, go for it. But just keep plugging away, which is exactly what he's doing. So, yeah, happy days.
Yeah. Good stuff from him. So, speaking of Oliveira, he was the next guy up, taking sixth place. I really am enjoying seeing Oliveira getting a really good result out of the KTM. I'm really stoked to see him on the factory bike next year. And this race, he had that really great fight with Quartararo for quite a lot of laps in the middle of the race.
They exchanged a lot of... blows, should we say?
Yeah, it was a lot of back and forth. That was the handlebar banging fighting that I want to see.
Yes, that's what we like. He's not shy. He's not shy to really stuff it under someone.
He's not shy in the slightest. I love him, man. He's one of my favourite riders.
Yes, I am looking forward to what is going to happen next year when he's on the full factory.
Oh, him and Binder are going to have so many scraps on track, mate. It's going to be great.
I think, yeah, we're in for something special. Yeah, he's just looks really, really at home on that bike.
Yeah.
Like you say, I'm sure next year we're going to see him and his teammate duffing it out track after track, corner after corner, wiping each other out. I'm absolutely certain that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, just fully deserves to be in that factory team.
Yeah.
So you can't really ask much more of him. He's taken the Tech 3 bike to the right pointy end of the standing. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, he's won a race this year and he's kind of doing everything he can do with that bike now. The only guy that's been able to kind of I guess pretty consistently outperform him is Pol Espargaró. And Pol Espargaró in this race did finish fourth. Dragged everything out of the KTM. It is quite disappointing he hasn't managed to win a race this year, but if we get rain in either of the two Valencia races, I mean, he put a KTM that is way worse than this one on the box at the end of 2018, was it?
Yes.
So I would not bet against him going one or two better if we get rain in Valencia this year.
No, absolutely. Even mixed conditions, I think if he could just keep a level head, he'll be on the podium,
yeah,
all day long. What more do you want? Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And the same can be said for the two Suzuki boys. Keep doing what you're doing.
Literally.
Johan Mir now, like we've just said, got his 14-point lead in the championship over Fabio Quartararo. Hasn't won a race to get there, but has just been on the box constantly. Just second, third, just plugging away. Third again in this race from a 12th place qualifying position.
That's a good climb. That is a very good climb.
Yeah, it's once again just showing us how it's done. And Alex Rins now back up to full strength, qualifying third, second in the race. These boys are on one now. It's a shame that Rins got hurt early in the year because he really would have been up there.
That is a big shame. I'm pretty sure he would have almost not run away with the championship by now, but he would have pulled a comfortable points lead over everyone else.
Certainly would have done. And you've got to think, even if he, even with his injury, like he binned at least two or three good results in the middle of the season. He crashed from a lead in one race. He crashed from a couple of podium positions. So even with his injury, actually, if he hadn't have made those mistakes, he'd be up there.
Absolutely. Happiest factory in the paddock by far.
Yeah, sure it is. And the guy, they're just so cool as well. Like they're both pretty chill. They're both like, it doesn't seem to be getting to them. They're both quite relaxed with the situation. Mir, I mean, if I was Mir at this point, I'm like, fuck, I need to win a race because this is getting silly.
I would need some Valium to calm me down.
Yeah, but he's just fine.
I can't begin to understand the mental mindset you would need to be that calm when you're realistically with got one hand on that trophy.
Yeah.
You know, I would be having kittens. I would not know what to do with myself.
I'd spend the next 2 weeks before the next race not being able to sleep.
No, I'd probably be up. I'd be a mess by the time we got there. I'd literally, like, Friday would come round. I would just, I don't know. How they could stay that calm is just something else.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what a fantastic weekend for him.
Yeah, a really great weekend for both of the riders, for the whole factory.
Yep.
And let's dive into Yamaha. We've been speaking about cool riders, chill riders. So let's dive into the race winner, shall we, before we cover the other two.
Let's go straight for it.
Franco Morbidelli might legitimately be the coolest guy I've ever seen on TV.
He really pisses me off. He's like the embodiment of like what I'd like to be. Good at motorbike racing, looks like Jimi Hendrix, and just is an all-round nice guy.
And never, and everyone loves him. His voice never rises. He's always calm. He's measured. He sounds cool. He looks cool. Like, I just want to rip his leathers off and sleep with him. I just think he's an amazing guy. I love him to bits. And yeah, like you say, he's everything I would love to be. Sadly, I'm not. But if I could be anyone in the world right now, it would be Frankie Morbidelli.
Absolutely. revelation.
Who knew, man? I didn't know until this moment. But it was another dominant Lorenzo style win, wasn't it? It was go from the front, and not quite like his one in Misano where he just kept gapping everyone. He did on this one keep having to see Alex Rins there. Like every time he saw his pit board, it would be Alex Rins 8/10, Alex Rins 6/10, Alex Rins 8/10, Alex Rins the second, Alex Rins 8/10. And it was just constantly like that. So it's a very mentally taxing win, like we spoke about. But it wasn't that real handlebar bashing fight.
No, but even seeing that, every time you go around, you see your pit board and that gap is just not quite opening up. It's not really closing. And you get that pressure. You're going to get that mental mindset where you're just like, I have to pull the pin. He didn't.
But the problem is, isn't it? It's because if that's me, I'm going, fuck, if I make one mistake, he's on top of me. And then I make the mistake and he's overtaking me.
It didn't happen.
But it didn't happen for Frankie at all.
It just rode the inch perfect race.
Yeah.
Just didn't push. Knew he had a little gap. Not a comfortable gap, but a little gap. And he's like, right, we'll manage this. We'll think about this. We'll just ride this. And he did it. Just pulled it home, hair flapping out the back of his helmet. You know, just thinking, right. He was probably writing a song as he's riding around.
He definitely is. He's writing a song. He's trying to remember whether or not he turned the oven off before he left home 3 weeks ago. And yeah, he's trying to remember if you managed to remember to take the red socks out of his wash before he put his white t-shirts in there.
Yeah, he just looks so chilled.
Yeah.
And he just gets off the bike and he's just like, yeah, we did it. Grand.
I honestly think if Quartararo doesn't win the championship this year, Frankie Morbidelli will be Yamaha's next champion.
Yes, I completely agree.
I don't know when it will be, but if Quartararo can't do it this year, I don't think Quartararo can ever do it. Same way if Mav can't do it this year, I don't think Mav can ever do it. I think Morbidelli is the one that has grown in stature this year, who's looked at everything and gone, yeah, I'm not quite out of this championship yet, but there's still no pressure on me. I'm just going to do my thing and, you know, an opportunity will come to me when it comes to me.
Exactly. Just, I don't know. I don't really know what to say, really. It's just perfect.
So let's move on to his teammate.
Let's do that.
Fabio Quartararo here, qualified sixth, finished in eighth. The worst finishing position for any of the Yamahas. He's now 14 points adrift in the title battle. He's got to have a great three rounds, man. These two Valencia and one Portimao rounds, because, like we've just said, if he can't win the championship this year, when can he?
I honestly think the pressure could really get to him over these next three races.
I think it's got to him, man. I think it got to him at Aragon. I think this has screwed him. That changing the hard onto the medium tyre in Aragon 1 and getting the tyre pressure wrong, not his fault at all, obviously. But that, I think, put the pressure on, and I'm not sure he'll recover from that.
No, I can't see him winning it now. Unless something drastic happens, let's say Mir bins it, and doesn't score any points, I think that really is going to be the only way that he's going to win it.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I think he's pushing too hard. I think he's making the poor choices in terms of like racecraft.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think his racecraft's fine. I think it's the technical choices he's making that are bad.
I don't know. I see some things where he's just a little bit wide, and I think he's pushing too hard into some places and just dropping those sort of few tenths here and there, which is just allowing someone to catch up, duff him up, slip underneath him. And again, just then you've lost another second and just drags you back down the track. I just think, We've seen what he could do. We know how comfortable on that bike he is. I think you're right. I think it has got to him a bit earlier than what I thought.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because I didn't think we'd, at the start of the year, I didn't think we'd be saying this, but his performances are starting to resemble Maverick Vinales's somewhat.
A little bit, yeah. They are starting to go that way, which is a little bit worrying.
Can you imagine what it's going to be like in the factory Yamaha next year?
Oh my God, where are they? They're down in 14th and 16th.
Yeah, quite. And then the next week, they're first and second.
Yeah, I would not want to be a mechanic or anyone in there.
No, I think Lynn Jarvis is like, for fuck's sake.
And yeah, I think there'll be a lot of pouting next year from Lynn.
Certainly will be. And I think there's a lot this year. I mean, look at Yamaha this year. The factory Yamaha have won one race. The satellite Yamaha team have won five races.
Yeah, it's not good, is it? I don't know. I want to say things might have been a little bit different if Valentino was there. But, you know, we've seen Valentino been it, what, three times in races this season?
Valentino's not the consistent rider he once was.
No, it's just all, to me, Yamaha is starting to sort of slide apart a little bit.
Yeah.
And we're seeing I think we've already seen a shift in strength where all of a sudden the satellite team is far stronger than the factory team.
Yeah. And the Yamaha's fall at the moment is certainly not helped by the fact Suzuki have gone for a very similar kind of a lot of corner speed, very sweet handling bike, and just done it better.
They have.
It's Yamaha aren't being helped by the fact that KTM have appeared and created a race winning
hello, Jonathan Ross
and podium scoring bike as well, because that's taking chunks out of the Yamaha riders. Yamaha need to do something to regain their consistency.
Yeah, and well, we've been... Sorry, mate.
And I'm going to say, if that's, you know, almost scrap their entire team and bring the entire Patronus team over, then maybe it's time for Lynn Jarvis to go and put Raslan Razali in that job.
Ooh. But yeah, I completely agree. I'm starting to think heads are going to roll soon.
Mm.
Yeah, we've been saying for, what, 3-4 seasons now, Yamaha have to change this, they have to improve, they have to do this. And they've definitely made changes and they've improved the bike. But unfortunately for them, all their competitors have
also made, improved.
Yeah, if not made better strides to improve the bike.
And certainly the people that were behind them have come forward in much larger leaps, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I could see bad times coming at Yamaha, apart from maybe for one, maybe two riders that can get the results. But when you add, like, say, next year, you bring Marc Marquez back into it, those results potentially aren't going to be there.
No, that's it, exactly.
So I think, yeah, big things need to happen again.
Yeah, I agree. So Maverick Vinales, we've spoken about quite a lot, but he did qualify fourth. Pretty good result. Raced to seventh, not quite so good. Falling further behind the title leaders now. He's 19 points back, so he's still not out of it, but he requires a good 3 final rounds, just like everyone else.
If he can score solid points over the next few rounds and actually take the fight to Mir and try and force Mir into some errors, then I don't know.
Can you imagine the universe in which Maverick Vinales is mentally the stronger rider out of the two of them, who comes to Portimao putting the pressure on and isn't the one to crack?
Yeah, scrap what I just like.
I think it requires Mir to make an error. I think he requires Mir to either have a very bad race, two Valencia races, or have a crash. Or maybe Maverick Vinales is going to win this title by sprinkling the old COVID around Mir's motorhome.
Oh, that would be a thing, wouldn't it? We arrive at Valencia, no Mir. Where is he? He's positive.
God, that would fuck everything.
If I was Mir, then I'd just get out the bottle of whiskey and just sit in the corner.
Yeah.
Just be like, for fuck's sake.
That would be the worst way to lose this championship, wouldn't it? The worst way now. And these guys they're going to all be being really careful. They've seen what's happened to Rossi. We've seen, you know, in Moto2, Jorge Martin arguably could be leading the title if he didn't have to sit out two races. In Moto3, Tony Arbolino was a title challenger until he's had to sit out two races. So these guys are going to be being super careful for, I'm sure, the next 2 weeks until we get to Valencia. And then when they're at Valencia, I'm sure they're not going to leave. And I'm sure once they finish the Valencia round, they will be jumping in a hire car, driving to Portimao and not leaving and not seeing anyone.
I'd be walking around in a hazmat suit with breathing apparatus and cans of spray, just like, stay back.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be going anywhere, mate. I'd be staying in a hotel room and not doing anything.
I would not risk anything at this point, you know. Keep everyone back.
Yeah.
Don't go, like you say, stay in your hotel room, keep safe, and for God's sake, don't get COVID.
A maximum of a month now. So just, you know, if I'm in their position, you're fighting for a title. Arguably, there's, down to Alex Rins, 6 people that could realistically be in this title fight.
I mean, there was a little bit of talk that we might not even get to Portimao.
Seem to be a rumor flying around, doesn't it?
Yeah, Portuguese restrictions could mean that sporting events are cancelled.
Yeah.
Some travel bans as well, so we might not even get there, which I would be absolutely gutted over. But if it keeps people safe, it keeps people safe.
Well, that's it. That is the important thing at the end of the day. It's better that everyone's safe, but it would be a shame to see the championship decided earlier than it should have been.
Yes, so everyone, stay in your bubbles, keep safe, don't go mixing with anyone silly, and we'll see you all in Valencia.
Yeah, that's it. That's Steve's public service announcement there. So the talk of the actual race is over, we have a question from, I don't even know how to say this guy's surname, so I'm just going to say Dan.
We're going to call him Dan.
Oh, Dan. So, question from Dan. According to a recent article by Motorsport, Ducati still hasn't issued team orders in an effort to help Dovi or the team win the championship. What would be the purpose on holding back? None of the other Ducati riders are in a position to deliver like Dovi. Is the team that spiteful? If that's the case, I don't see Ducati as a functional challenger in the next few years, at least. Thoughts?
So, good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. My opinion on this is that it's Ducati, and I would not be surprised if they were being this spiteful. Mm-hmm. We did see them issue team orders, was it Malaysia 2018, with the mapping, suggested mapping 8 or whatever it was.
Something like that. It was a crazy bit of code, wasn't it? Popped up on the dash.
Yeah, and Lorenzo did ignore it, but then ran wide and Dovi got through anyway. And it is a good point. Why wouldn't they be doing that now on a chance that, you know, the title is more important now, arguably, than it was then? Yeah, I don't know.
It's a hard one to answer. I think it's actually at this point in time, it's almost this season, it's almost pointless.
Yeah. Well, Petrucci would, what's the point in Petrucci even listening? Yeah. He didn't give a fuck. As far as he's concerned, he's out next year. So Ducati, whatever they can say to him, he can just tell him to go swivel. Like, he doesn't care.
It was a sort of apt timed question as well, because we saw in qualifying that Ducati's trying to get Dovi through to qualifying two.
Yes.
By getting a toe off Jack Miller, which then backfired because Dovi didn't get through, and neither did Jack Miller because he was more into in a mindset of breaking the air up for Ducati, for Dovi, sorry, and then missed out himself when he had a good shout at going through to qualifying two.
Yeah, and actually Jack Miller is probably the Ducati that they are going to be wanting to ask to do team orders because he's the one that's with them next year.
Yes.
I don't know. The way I see it is actually if this team orders thing needs to happen, it actually needs to be a conversation between Dovi and Petrucci, just as friends, and just shut Ducati out. They don't have a fucking say in it. Dovi and Petrucci do it as mates, and then that's how Dovi wins this championship.
Yeah, I think if that was to happen and Dovi asked him, I think Petrucci would oblige.
Yeah.
But their grid positions this year just aren't really worth it.
No, that's a good point as well, because what happens if, you know, Petrucci lets him through? What, you score one extra point?
I mean,
this, actually, to be fair, in this year, of all years, one extra point's probably more important.
That could be the breaker, but, like, if we take this round just gone by, if Petrucci was to let Dovi by, Mir's still on the podium.
Yeah.
Yes, points mean prizes, but I think if they were continuing to battle for the podium, and let's say Petrucci was third, Dovi's fourth, then yes, put something out there. Let Dovi get on the podium. Let him have those extra few points. But they're just not there. We've seen teams do it before. It happens a lot in other motorsports. But I just don't see the point at the minute. They're not in a position to gain that much from one place.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. But yeah. It's a tough one, isn't it?
It is a tough one. If I was a team manager, personally, I would probably have the conversation with both riders and say, look, you're not in the title hunt. He's in the title hunt. If we do find you a position, two positions further up the field, then we are going to ask you to do your best to drag him up to you or switch places.
Yeah.
Are you okay with that? You know, ultimately, they're there to win the championship, be it for either rider. Yes, the rider that isn't in the title hunt is still going to want to finish as high up the points as possible, but he is essentially there to win the championship. So help your teammate out.
Yeah, it's the sad reality that as much as I hate team orders, motor racing is a team sport. And team orders will come into it. And if I hate team orders, I don't think they should be a thing, but we've seen in like Formula One when they were banned, it doesn't work. Like, banning team orders doesn't work. So maybe it's something we should all just embrace, and it's something we should work with. And it's not like the Michael Schumacher era of, you know, first race of the season, we want you to pull over and let Michael go through because he's our number one driver, full stop. We don't want that. But when we get into the last two or three rounds of the season, yes, maybe some, you know, some formation flying, some rear gunning, some team orders are the sensible way to do it. And in this, as we've said, in this year of all years, this is the year where team orders are going to play big. We're going to be in the same spot. It's not only Dovi and Petrucci that are going to be having trouble with team orders. We're going to have, as the year goes on now, Suzuki are going to have a real issue with what to do with team orders. Because if Alex Rins carries him in this trajectory, it's looking like he could throw himself into a title fight for Portimao. Patronus Yamaha are going to have issues. Because if Morbidelli carries on like this, he could put himself in. Realistically, we could get to Portimao and we could look with four or five guys mathematically in for a chance at this championship. And that is going to likely be two Suzukis, two Patronus Yamahas, potentially Maverick and potentially Dovi. That's really going to fuck with it, because what do you do team orders wise then?
Every man for himself.
I think that's what it has to be, don't it? If you're Suzuki or you're Patronus Yamaha coming into it, you have to be like, look, lads, we can't team can't order pick. Anything. So you just gonna have to go.
I would not want to be a team manager that sits. You have two riders down in the box who have both got a shout at winning the title and say, right, we're picking you.
Yeah.
You help him win it. You're not winning the title this year. I would literally hold my hands up and go for it.
Be like, tell you what, mate, you're going to have to pay me a lot of money for that. And you can't afford it because I assure you it will cost way too much. So let's just go and race.
Yeah. Hard question. Team orders definitely play their part. And they are a factor in motorsport. But Ducati this year, don't know. I agree with Tim. I think they are that spiteful. Mm.
And on that note, shall we call it there?
Let's call it.
We'll discuss Fantasy League next week because we're not going to have a race to talk about. So we'll have to pad the show out somehow. So if anyone has got any other questions for us, anything you want to hear us just riff about for a bit, please do get in touch. You can find us on...
We are For the Love of MotoGP. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and we have a Facebook page, or drop us an email. We are For the Love of MotoGP @gmail.com.
Good stuff, mate. You are nailing this.
I am. I'm just breezing it now. It's starting to come naturally, although sometimes I do have to remind myself before we start recording.
Good stuff. Right, guys. On that note, thank you very much for listening. We will speak to you all next week when we'll be previewing the triple header coming up, and just
excited.
We'll find something to talk about. So stay safe, look after yourselves, and we will speak to you all next week. Goodbye.
Take care, guys.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.